All right. Can all commissioners see and hear and indicate by giving me a high thumbs up? Perfect. Can all the members of the public see and hear? And if I see your photo, just indicate it with a thumbs up. I'm going to assume. Okay. Caleb, I got that. Okay. Oh, Brandon, there you go. All right. Thank you. I'm going to assume everybody else is good to go. This meeting is being recorded. Once President Brooks asked me to call the roll, indicate you are here as well, give permission to record by verbally stating here, permission to record.
Okay, I call the January 5th, 2021 Committee of the Whole meeting of the Glencoe Park District to order. Lisa, please call the roll and note the time.
Member Underdunk?
Here and permission to record.
Member Ludden?
Here, permission to record.
Member Kobe?
Here, permission to record.
Member Boren?
Here, permission to record.
And Cheers Brooks?
Here, permission to record.
Just a little housekeeping also, Lisa, is if you're not speaking, if we can put yourself on mute so we do not hear a lot of the background noise, if possible. Okay, thank you.
Okay, it is our practice not to address questions at this time. However, we will take comments under advisement. Is there anyone who would like to make a verbal comment? If so, please limit comments to 3 minutes per person. I don't see that that would be happening. So we'll move on to the discussion on Glencoe Beach pier resurfacing concepts. Lisa Shepherd and Chris Liner will lead the discussion and introduce Caleb Bart from Baird.
All right, I'm going to throw it right over to Chris.
So,
Caleb, actually.
Let me just briefly introduce Caleb. Caleb is our lead civil engineer with Baird on the project. So as you may remember, Baird is the coastal engineering firm that we brought in to initially do all the surveys of Glencoe Beach, the bluffs, retaining walls. They were the principal firm on the report that was provided to the board. So Baird and Caleb and their team are really foremost experts on coastal engineering in the Great Lakes as well as areas around the world. So we're really lucky to have an individual like Caleb on the project. So there's a lot of information here. Caleb is going to be very nice in presenting us a very shortened version that is not several hundred pages for tonight's meeting. So welcome, Caleb, and I'll turn it over to you.
Thank you, Chris. Thank you, Lisa. I hope you're able to hear me. Yeah, my last name is Bart. You got it correct. Lisa. Should I go ahead and share my screen then?
Yes, please. There's just a little bit of background history. Everyone knows that Lake Michigan has kicked our butts down on the pier the last few years. And it's likely that if it wasn't for COVID-19, everyone in Glencoe would be talking about Lake Michigan right now. So that's an area where we kind of had to pause things in the spring with the pier, and we worked to bring Baird on once we kind of identified what we were going to still be able to do at the district and going forward, and opening the beach was one of those things. So I will just turn things over to Caleb from this point on.
Yeah, thanks, Chris. Yeah, and that's a good kind of introduction into, you know, where Lake Michigan is right now. So Lake Michigan normally goes on, you know, periods of low water, periods of high water, right around a 2-year period of high water. What we're experiencing right now isn't really unusual. It's sort of towards the higher end, but it's something we need to plan for. And yes, there's a lot of communities who are having problems right now with high water levels. But it's just something we have to plan for. And it's a great introduction to kind of what we're talking about. So we're talking about the pier deck. Next slide. Can everyone see my screen? I see a thumbs up, Lisa. Thank you. What I'm going to be going over is, so we did a conceptual design study for a few different alternatives to replace the deck. And so we looked at a more robust decking replacement, so trying to keep the composite deck appearance. And then we also looked at another alternative, looking at a cast-in-place concrete overlay deck. So I'll be presenting each of those options and also kind of going over high-level evaluation of the alternatives. There is a photo of the pier, I think that was taken in maybe September, and you can see that the concrete deck of the pier is exposed, and that's kind of a current condition, or at least last time I was out there, that's kind of what the pier looks like right now. And so basically the pier elevation, the surface elevation, it's located at kind of a low elevation, which is kind of what you want to be at when you're trying to enjoy the lake on a normal day. But ultimately, you need to expect frequent wave overtopping during most water levels. And then ultimately, the problems to date have largely been caused by freeze-thaw cycle of water trapped under the deck board, the sleepers. And so we're trying to minimize some of those problems with the alternatives that we're looking at. So as I stated, so the first alternative we looked at was a more robust decking replacement. And the proposed concept was developed to improve surface water drainage and to provide a more robust connection to the pier concrete cap. And so really what this concept involves is, so first adding a concrete overlay over the existing concrete, so removing the asphalt beds that's remaining, adding a concrete overlay. And what we're trying to do with that concrete overlay is slope the existing surface so we can get rid of some of that surface water faster. And we would look to add some V grooves into the surface. So these V grooves would penetrate underneath the sleepers, provide more drainage for that surface water that's getting trapped underneath the sleepers. Also, the pier deck would be supported by 4x4 sleepers, so a little more heavy duty. These would be anchored with steel brackets to the existing concrete. And then the decking would be attached to these sleepers. The image on the left is a conceptual plan view, and then on the right is more details on the sleepers. Along with that, we're looking at replacing the handrails and the miscellaneous metals that fall with the handle around the perimeter of the pier, and also updating some of the light fixtures.
Caleb, is that a top-down view on the left?
On the left is a top-down view, yes. Yes, and so it has several different cuts, so you can see the deck boards on the top, and then it's a cut to the sleepers, and then a cut to the V-grooves in the concrete overlay.
Caleb, you mentioned new handrails. What will those be made out of, and will there be still rusting issues that we currently have?
There are different options for the handrail.
Okay. I mean,
there could be you could look at steel, you could look at fiber reinforced polymer, a little bit higher cost, but you don't have the same problem with rusting. There are a couple different alternatives.
Thank you.
Question. Caleb, what about the underlying pier itself? What kind of condition is that in? Is that going to have to be replaced in 10 years, 20 years? Are we putting a cap on top of a foundation?
Let me just kind of jump in. We did a structural survey of the pier 6 years ago. Was kind of the start of our master plan process. We brought in structural engineers to look at the pier, and they kind of gave us the thumbs up other than the decking. The scope of Caleb's proposal and concept plan really wasn't taking a look at the foundations. I mean, when we remove that cap, we may find that we have to do some compaction of existing stone and things like that. But the actual pilings and the associated parts with that were found to be in good condition 5 years ago. So that's really beyond what Caleb's scope was in his concept, but I'll let him jump back in if there's anything I missed there.
Yeah, to kind of expand on that, thanks Chris. To kind of expand on that, so in general, steel structures, steel groins on the Great Lakes, we don't, as a designer, rusting really isn't a huge concern of mine when I'm designing a structure. It's more of a concern when you're designing something in the oceans where you have salt or some sort of a roadway where you have a lot of de-icing salts. In general, structures on the Great Lakes, corrosion isn't a huge issue. larger issues from abrasion, so sand washing back and forth on that steel structure. In general, steel structures have a pretty long life on the Great Lakes. As Chris said, you know, we didn't do a structural assessment of the existing pier. So you know, I can't really comment any more on that than kind of what I said. And we're not going to be replacing the existing concrete cap, so we will be demoing the rest of the. So as the pier stands right now, about 50% of the pier is still covered with asphalt, or at least the last time we were out there. So there's this thin layer of asphalt on the existing concrete cap, and so. I've looked at what's exposed right now, and I'm not too concerned with the existing concrete. If when the contractor removes the remaining asphalt, we know that there's an issue, some cracking or something, we may have to come up with a kind of a localized fix for the pier in that area. But yeah, does that kind of answer your question?
That answers that question. One follow-up question. What about rising lake levels, say another 2-3 feet? Do we need to raise the decking in the pier, or what happens when we do the decking? Is this a replacement project, or will it be up another 6 inches, or what happens?
Yep, so kind of what I covered, you know, talked about water levels a little bit, you know, at the beginning. So water levels on Great, so we would never expect, like, the average lake level to go up another 2 feet. It would, you know, it's not really something we really plan for. So we look at, when we look at water levels, we look at a high intensity. So we can't really predict what water levels are going to do in the future. But what we have is 100 good years of data on the water level in the Great Lakes. We look at water levels. We know kind of how it normally fluctuates long-term plus seasonally. We evaluate those water levels and combine it with, so you have these long-term water level fluctuations, and also you have these shorter-term water fluctuations due to storm events. And so we look at a statistical analysis of those, and you know, where the water level is right now, it's at a very high water level. We don't really expect it to go much higher. Just looking at historically what the water levels are in the Great Lakes. So when you're planning a structure like this, so back, 8, 9, 10 years ago, water levels were at kind of closer to historic lows. So the problems people were having were not so much, like coastal erosion, worried about, they were more worried about dredging. So we need to, when we look at the people, we need to realize that water levels are going to come back down. We're kind of at a high right now, so raising the elevation of the pier, it's when we have lower water levels, then the pier is even going to be higher out of the water. So it's just something we kind of want to think about when we're thinking about the elevation of the pier. What we're kind of proposing right now is just.
Excuse me. Will the cap raise the level of the pier slightly?
Slightly. It was less than 6 inches, I believe, for both options.
Now, I had a conversation with Cam Davis, and he seemed to think that we ought to consider in all our planning a little bit more of water in the lake. But, you know, I think 6 inches would take care of it. Okay, thank you.
Same discussion with Cam, and he agreed with that.
Okay, so just looking at this, you know, for the first alternative, there is more detail in the report. This is kind of a high level. On the right, there's some itemization of the painting of probable construction cost. We've, you know, because this is concept level, we've included 10% contingency for design growth, as well as a 5% just owner's contingency, just to hold back. Just to hold back for risks attributed to the owner during the construction. So it's like we talked, maybe some repairs to the concrete cap that's underneath the asphalt right now. And then also that it's, there's a accuracy range adjustment added as well, plus 0, plus 15%. So we expect this to be somewhere in the range of 540,000 to 630,000. Any other questions about alternative one before I jump over to the next alternative? Okay, and so the second alternative is looking at a cast in place concrete overlay deck. This option, it'll be a concrete surface instead of a deck surface, what traditionally has been out on the pier. Ultimately, this option will minimize the possible modes of failure or damage that could occur, because we don't have the sleepers, the connections, and all that goes with it. And really, we're trying to minimize the opportunity for the freeze or thaw cycle of water to cause damage to the pier surface. Because the elevation of the pier surface is frequently overtopped by waves. What this concept consists of is a minimum 4.5 inches of concrete overlay. There would be at least one layer of reinforcement in this concrete. It would be sloped to drain surface water. And we would look to add a decorative concrete finish, looking at maybe a stained and stamped finish to the concrete surface. And then along with the other alternative, looking at replacing handrails, the other miscellaneous perimeter metals, and light fixtures, or updating the light fixtures. Just knowing the importance of the site to the community, we would want to understand the surface finish, so we would, in the specifications, we would require that the contractor does like a demonstration of the surface finish, so they would demonstrate the on a, maybe a 4x4 panel, the finish, the stain and the stamp, so that the Parks District could approve that before they go forward and do the entire surface here. And the images that you see up there, the left is another just a plan view and a couple cross sections off to the right. And then this is the opinion of probable construction costs for alternative two. So the cost for this one is somewhere between $320K to $270K, so it's so lower than alternative one. Any questions about alternative two before I move on?
Are we going to talk about the surfacing next or not?
What we'll do is that we'll bring back to the board, we're going to look at all the different surfacing and how it holds up to skid steer that we have to put on the surfacing to get the sand off, and we'll bring back to the board 3 to 5 different recommendations, or maybe 3, and then we can narrow it down from there. As you saw the packet, there's a lot of different ones in there, so I don't think that we want to get into that discussion right now exactly, but we know what we want to do is make sure that something looks good that won't get ruined with the skid steer on it, and so that, you know, after the first year of us doing maintenance on it, doesn't look awful. And so we'll work with our landscape architecture, we'll work with Caleb and bring recommendations back at a later date. We're not looking for this project to even start till fall now, just based on our, in the spring, we have very iffy weather, so if we have 2 weeks of bad weather in May, that would push us off into the peak season. And as you can imagine, either alternative, we don't want that to hamper our operations of the beach, so we'll probably look to do it after Labor Day in the fall, so we have time to finish, we pick out that material.
I have a question, Caleb. A lot of this is a little bit out of my wheelhouse. I am not an engineer, nor do I play one on TV. But to me, I like what Dudley was saying about, we should prepare for a little bit higher, although I don't even know if that's possible. I don't know if the Gulf of Michigan could get higher if it rains out someplace else. I'm not in an engineer. But what I'm curious about is, have we thought of, besides alternative one, alternative two, which I think is exactly one of those, have we thought of other concepts that we could do to help prevent damage to the pier itself, like you see at other beaches, rock borders, like if the winds tend to come from the north, we put, boulders out, which may be unsightly, but the boulders in front of it to sort of stop the gigantic waves from coming and damaging either alternative one or other alternative two. I'm sure you thought about some of these considerations. Give us more information on that.
Yeah, and yeah, so that's a great comment, Mike. So what you're kind of referring to, is looking at more the site holistically, looking at the stability of the sand and the beach on the site. We did look at that a little bit a couple of years ago. There are options to add, we look at adding smerch groins, some offshore breakwaters. I think ultimately at the time when we were looking at it, there wasn't a lot of desire to kind of go that route to the beach. In this study, this study was more focused on just replacing the deck.
Michael, when the original Baird assessment was presented to the board, there was some dialogue about those shore fortifications. Those really, the entry level price for those starts in the millions of dollars. And really beyond that, the concern at the time of several of the commissioners was what those were going to look like at low lake levels. I mean, because at high lake levels, you see, the top 25, 30 inches of them. But when you get to historically low lake levels, you end up with something that really does appear to be a fortification out there. So at the time, and Lisa Brooks, if you want to correct me if I'm wrong, there was really a dialogue amongst the board that one, we didn't want to start on a project that had a $2.5 million entry cost with something that may really change the character of the beach. That was kind of where that started and ended about 4 years ago, but I think it was a really good thought as far as this is concerned. Most of our damage is frost thaw and wave action. So I don't see a shore fortification, and Caleb, correct me if I'm wrong, I don't think that's going to prevent our frost thaw damage that we've had in the past. I could see that kind of slowing down some of the larger waves that we've had, but really once that material got lifted up, even just a quarter to a half an inch was really what started us down the road of losing the previous deck.
Yeah, so going forward to try to minimize the wave action of the gear by adding some stone structures, adding a growth attached breakwater or something. It's going to be way too expensive for what we're looking at for the cost of replacing the gear deck. Adding groins, detached breakwaters, like submerged, even submerged breakwaters, it's something you can look at, but it would be more for holding a maximum amount of the sand, minimizing how much beach nourishment needs to happen every year. That'd be more what you look to add more stone structures to the site.
I will. I apologize. I thought you were done because it was breaking up a little bit. Continue.
The last thing I was going to add, really when I looked at the site years ago, it was the most where you get the most performance out of some stone structures was adding stone structures more, to try to connect the two beaches. So to build that beach in front of the one, I forget if it's a building or a pump house, but trying to connect the two beaches there. The actual width of the beach near the pier is quite wide.
Yeah. Michael, I'll be happy to share those with you. I'll have Chris email that design over just to see, so you can see what the board talked about and considered in the past.
That would be great. Thank you, Lisa. I think I will say, Caleb, you're probably going to hear this for the first time, but the board is going to hear this for the umpteenth time. I cannot tell you how shocked I am that something boulders in a lake cost millions of dollars. Like, I just don't understand it. And I was actually at Rosewood Beach the other day looking at, how they do it, and theirs is obviously a little bit different than our scheme, but it just still baffles my mind that something gold, but just everything, the cost of everything is just baffling to me. But you guys have done your homework, so I will yield the floor to somebody else, and thank you for your in-depth review. Chris, Caleb, and Lisa, please send that over, everybody.
Yeah, so maybe just a really high level, Mike. A lot of the armor stone you see comes from quarries, kind of throughout Wisconsin. normally. It has to travel a great distance, and every single stone is placed one stone at a time. And it often has to be, you know, moved around and everything. So it's, yeah, it is very expensive. I have a project just north of Rosewood right now. Can be built in the next. Yeah, it's really expensive.
Always baffles me, but.
And may I say also, Caleb, expensive with no guarantees, because we're talking about a natural phenomenon that can't be predicted. So all those big old boulders could go in, and maybe the result wouldn't be what we desire.
To really mitigate some of that, so Baird was involved in Forest Park. Baird was involved in Rosewood. We did a lot of the initial modeling on those projects. So we build a scale model, like multi-scale model, within a university big wave tank. So actually, when we build a structure like that, we do have some good understanding of how it's going to perform. And then nowadays there's just the computing power we have. You do a lot of this modeling numerically. But I would say normally we have a pretty good understanding of how it's going.
Any other questions about this alternative?
I think Caleb had prepared some best practices as well for maintenance, just to kind of discuss that.
Perfect. Thank you.
Yeah, so just talking a little bit about the maintenance. So alternative one, the composite deck boards in a normal standard application normally require minimal maintenance. Ultimately, on Lake Michigan, in this application, the crushing strength of ice is very high. Damage from ice is very difficult to prevent. And so ultimately what we're trying to do with alternative one is encourage better drainage, making more robust connections, but ultimately the damage could still occur. It's kind of hard to predict that, but at the very least, it would require some routine cleaning, sweeping and washing the surface, but other than that, the surface wouldn't really require a whole lot. For alternative two, you would need that routine cleaning, so we're talking about the concrete overlay now, and also the concrete surface is sealed, and that we would need to reseal that about every 2 to 3 years. So it's not a huge requirement, but there is some maintenance required for each of these options.
What's the cost of a resealing, the stud estimate?
I don't have that. $10,000 to $15,000. I don't think it'd be, maybe not even that much. But let me. I could get that information for you.
Do it internally, Chris? Sealing?
It really depends on what the surface finish is. I mean, because sometimes the surface finish can have warranty issues as far as what sealer has to be applied, whether they have to be factory certified, those kinds of things. I do have some experience sealing concrete on pool decks. I think $10,000 to $15,000 is probably on the high end as far as that's concerned, Caleb. But it's certainly $10,000 is probably a pretty good placeholder. For something like that every 2 to 3 years. I think that's pretty realistic.
Yeah, thanks, Chris. So we're talking also about just operations given the frequent overtopping, the sand from the beach is frequently washed up over on top of the pier and then pushed back to the beach. So talking a little bit about the sand maintenance. So both surfaces are susceptible to some damage if the maintenance activities are careless. It's nothing you can really get away from. I think the big difference between the two alternatives is that it's much easier to replace a single damaged deck board than it would be to really repair the surface of decorative concrete surfaces. If those maintenance activities did chip the concrete surface or part of the sealer. And ultimately, some of the best practices that the park districts could do when they're maintaining the sand is, so one, at the very least, use rubber or plastic polymer for the cutting edge on the they use, course, use rubber-tired equipment, and also look to use skid pads to kind of hold the blade off the surface. You really want to kind of minimize anything that you have to do there. I'm sure some of that stuff you already do, well, maybe all of that, but I mean, those are kind of the key best practices for maintaining sand on the surface.
Quick question. In your evaluation of alternatives, you suggest that durability, resiliency for alternate two is actually higher than alternate one. Is that because it's a unified cord system?
Yeah, it kind of gets back to the modes of failure. So,
I don't want to beat this horse to death, but it'd be fair to say it's a more long-term robust solution than the other one. Not that the other one is bad, but you have good and then you have excellent on alternate two.
Yeah, that's a fair statement, though.
Okay, thanks.
Were there any other questions about?
Sorry. When was the last time we put a capital investment into here?
A repair or a capital investment?
Let's call it a capital investment.
In the mid, the early 90s.
Okay, how much annually do we spend to repair this thing?
We spent around $70,000 the last time we did it. It was only the last 60 or so feet of the pier, and it lasted about 40 days, and then Lake Michigan took it off.
So, can I ask you for an exercise, and maybe this is something Carol can do? Can you just estimate for me what, you know, over the past 5 years, how much money we have put into this pier? I'm curious to understand. I think the pier is beautiful. I love the pier. I don't want to get rid of the pier, but I do think it's, for transparency, it'd be great to know, is this pier costing us $20,000 a year? Is it costing us $100,000?
It all depends on the year. That's the problem. Because, I mean, the years were like, the first 10 or 15 years we owned the pier, we had very little maintenance except painting the railings because of the historically low lake levels.
Yep.
The lake came up, got on top of the pier, and that was kind of the end of it. So it's hard to pull a data point and say, well, you know, standard out over 15 years, it cost us $8,100 a year to own the pier, because really the five most expensive years of the pier have been the last 5 years.
Perfect. I'll take the last 5 years.
Okay.
And then we also have to figure, we got insurance money on some of that too, so.
No, and the fact is that you have to, if you really want to do this correctly, we have to actually, what investment in the pier did to save the erosion on the beach as well, right? Because that pier is probably protecting part of the swimming beach too.
Exactly. It definitely is.
I'm trying to just frame this in my head to figure out, are we making the right amount of investment here? I think the answer, Chris, if you've probably already done the homework, I think the answer is going to be yes. But my head is just not there, because for at least 6 more months I get the claim, or 4 more months I get the claim to be the new guy on the board.
So there's two things that I think are important to note, Michael. We did get about $130,000 from Poderma for this repair.
Oh.
So they've given us 50% of that, which is about $69,000 up front, and they'll pay us the rest. They are not a fan of paying to fix the same broken thing over and over again.
I love it.
So we will get to a point where, let's say we said, okay, we're going to just put back the deck as it was, and we're going to do it in-house, and it's going to be $80,000. They're not going to continue to cover it year after year that it's damaged. They're going to say, well, this is the application. This is what we're going to give you. If you want to keep it that way, it's out of your pocket. That's fairly common in districts where they have flooding issues on golf courses. Poderma will pay you once, twice, but after that, it's on you.
Yeah.
Okay. Correct me if I'm wrong, but is this not the $69,000, isn't that the start of the third time they're paying for this pier repair?
Yes, that's correct. So they paid us over $100,000 for the pier. I would expect this to be the last time.
Okay, thank you.
I have a quick question, Caleb. Should we choose, let's just say, option number two, what is your estimate of the amount of time? I know it's weather dependent, but only because September is such a beautiful month at the beach, and I know that this is going to be very disruptive with, you know, trucks and all that kind of thing. How long will it take to do the project?
I would guess it would take 3 to 4 weeks, close to a month.
Okay. And September is optimal as opposed to maybe, say, October?
October is not, it really depends on, so one, what the temperature is. So if it's, the weather's starting to get too cold, if we are getting under like 40 degrees, the contractor has to take extra precautions when it comes to placing and curing the concrete.
Right.
Do it actually later in the year.
Okay.
So there could be some cost impacts. It all depends on what the weather is.
Sure. So, for example, this October, like at the, it was really cold on Halloween, and then it warmed up again, but we can't take that risk. I don't think so.
Right. And is this also the same time when we would consider doing the stairs, or is that at a separate time?
The stairs to the boating beach?
Yeah.
We're hopefully pursuing the stairs to the boating beach as a spring project.
Okay.
That's our goal right now.
So this would be the only thing at that time?
Well, we would also...
And the outside of the beach.
Well, we would also be working on the crib wall as well, which is separate from this project in the fall. We would be shooting to potentially start that, which is on the ramp.
Right. Similar to what we did this year.
Yeah.
But folks will still be able to go down.
Right? Yes.
Okay. Just very quickly, Caleb, thank you. First of all, thank you for the presentation. It was really interesting.
Sorry, I have a question, Lisa.
Oh, yes. I was actually saying thank you, but I was going to ask a question. So I'll just quick get this out, and then it's your turn. So I'm wondering, I know you're a marine engineer. I know you've made a couple of recommendations, and we're not going to get into it, what exactly kind of surface in terms of the concrete, appearance. Do you have landscape designers on your team who offer a design service to make a good choice, or is it just based on your experience, or how does that work? Because I know you're going to be giving us a few choices, and I'm wondering what those are going to be based on other than durability.
Yeah, great question, Lisa. Paul gets back to the right left brain. I'm an engineer. We do have landscape architects, and ultimately they would be involved in kind of selecting some options for the park district to consider.
Perfect. Thank you. Because it's a little of a mishmash down there, as you've seen. It's a mission style, beach house, and then a Chicago style halfway house, and then a kind of a Nantucket style pier. So it's not easily, for me at least, it's not easy to see what would be the best thing. So thank you very much, Caleb. And I apologize, Josh. Go ahead.
Oh, thank you. And aesthetics was a good lead-in. Caleb, other than aesthetics, are there drawbacks to option zero, which is don't do anything?
Good question.
Yeah, that's a great question. I think maybe the only other thing maybe safety. As the piers right now, you have piers where it's concrete, you have areas where it's you have some of the asphalt left over. And then around the exterior, you have where the steel cap that's on top of the sheet piling is raised a little bit. And maybe the one thing that comes to mind is just user safety walking around on the roof here.
That's generally under the railing, though, correct?
Where it's raised up is under the railing. The asphalt. It's kind of halfway along the pier, I think, is where kind of the asphalt transition, where it transitioned from asphalt drop down to the concrete. Yeah.
I would say that, to Josh's point, if the board just wanted to leave it as is, I would think we would recommend to remove the asphalt slip sheet, just to remove that transition. We do have a barrier that we were maintaining, ensuring that the sand was falling in a certain way during the season, which is tricky as the beach closes to go from there. I would say that I don't think option zero will work for the railings where we're at right now. The railings are in pretty tough shape. So I think we really motivated. Well, Paderma will tell us that the railings are not required by law. So you could put up a sign and say, you know, walk out on the pier at your own risk. And if somebody, when you go down in Chicago and you can walk along the breakwater and there's no railing. So they're not required by law, but they have been best practice here in Glencoe. But there really isn't an option zero. There would have to be work done to either repair the railings or remove the railings in their entirety.
Which would be aesthetics. I mean, this year we kind of put sand over it, you know, to help with the look of it. Any ADA concerns, Chris?
There isn't. I mean, you could do a ramp at the end. I mean, it would have to, you know, run out over maybe 15 or 20 feet. There would have to be some work done there. You wouldn't be allowed to say, oh, just, you know, put some sand there. That wouldn't pass ADA muster. But, again, that wouldn't be, you know, the $250,000 or $300,000 that we're seeing here today. But it would require some design work.
Well, and I think it's fair to say form and function are connected. So if this fix raises it by 6 inches, it certainly will change the possibility of water sloshing over it, or, you know, all of the other things that happen. So, you know, I think they're more closely tied than two separate issues. So
I think it's a good point though, Josh.
And really always have to be considered, must we do something? I mean, we always should be considering that, so it's certainly...
I think it's certainly not attractive the way that it is, and I'm not necessarily advocating for option zero. It's just, you know, looking at the capital plan projects that Lisa resent to us earlier today, I think the question that we'll find ourselves with is, do we have a better use of $300,000 or $400,000 or $500,000?
Does anyone have any further questions?
Just one. So, just going back to Josh's point, we did get insurance money. So, not that we can't apply that to a fix, but again, we don't want to keep throwing money at it. That's just kind of not, in my opinion, not a great thing either. You're going to do it or not, just replace it. But just can you clarify on that insurance money? It has to be used towards this.
Correct. Carol, I'm correct in saying that? We're not going to get the second payment for sure.
Yeah. I mean, there was an understanding that we would replace it with the first part of the settlement that they gave us, the $69,000. Mm-hmm. Although I don't know if it's very clear that if we didn't, because they're basing it on the damage that was done when they assessed the pier.
Yes. So they assessed what they perceived to be the replacement value of the original decking system that we had on the pier. And then we had a little bit of aggressive negotiation and saw that number come up to a little bit more of a real world number. And that's where we got 50%. I don't see, you know, I mean, we have expended obviously some funds for, you know, Caleb's concept plan, but I don't see in good faith being able to hold on to that money and just leave it where it is. I mean, Lisa?
Well, we'd have to fix the railing, do the ADA improvements. There are some improvements that have to be done if we just leave it as is. So we would expend some of that money.
The surface that's currently on there, and I know we've had to replace that a bunch, so it's probably not...
There's no surface.
Harrison, what was that surface? That's obviously not alternative one or two, right? That was a completely different surface.
No, it was one, but Cable's design is much more robust than the Trex decking we had in the past.
It looked like decking.
Yeah, it looked like decking.
It looked like wood.
And it's going to, with these high lake levels, it'll just keep on popping up every year. You know, even with the more robust, we still have a chance of that happening. So we couldn't just get Chris's guys put out the same decking without doing major improvements. It would just look awful 40 days later, just like last time.
So I would just ask staff, I don't think you're asking us for a decision or an approval today, but I would ask you that when we discuss this again, if we could think of it in terms of net, you know, both gross and net cost, taking into account any additional insurance proceeds that we receive that we would not otherwise be able to receive.
So when will we discuss the two options and what people prefer?
We're discussing them now. We're not voting today, nor do we, because we're not doing a draw, need a decision today or in the January board meeting. Chris, when would you say the latest we could have that decision?
I mean, I think from a perspective of function and cost, you know, I think we can determine the finish at a later date. But beyond tonight's meeting, the current scope for Baird is exhausted. So if we move on to the next step, we have to pick a design to say, well, this is aesthetically and functionally what we want, and then we would build Baird's, you know, design development and construction management contract around that. So based on what I've heard tonight, I don't think there's a revision for Caleb. We just would have to select a finish at a later date.
No, my question is, when would be the latest to make a decision and keep on with the process and stay on our deadline for fall?
I mean, I would like to make a decision as soon as we can.
Can we do it in February? Does it have to be done in January?
Yes, we can do it in February.
So we would need to make a decision when we want to go into February. So any other information you would require for our next discussion? And again, you know, Caleb presents everything he can up to this point. So so far here, you just want gross and net cost of the pier insurance proceeds.
Well,
anything else you would like to
just, well, it's just the $70,000 we're expecting, right?
We received the first payment.
We're getting the second half, right?
Yeah, it's like, I think it's $55,000, the second payment.
Okay. All
so right. The whole total is about $110,000, so that gets you an idea.
So Lisa,
okay,
so you're
a little more than a quarter of it.
Are you interested? Are you interested in us discussing these two options and the third option on the?
Definitely. All right. I think you should just fresh in your mind, but whatever decision you make doesn't have to be done today. So.
Okay. All right. Who'd like to go first, Dudley?
Doing a comparison, I'm very interested in preventative. Measures and making sure that we have something that's quite robust. Once we make these improvements, I'd like not to have to talk about it much in the future. Option number two seems to fill that bill to a higher level than option one, although option one might be more, what do we say, aesthetically pleasing. You know, if you had tiles on it, sunbursts and things, I don't know. But I don't know that that's in keeping with the community's values anyway. So anyway, I'm leaning toward option two, but I can be convinced that for aesthetic reasons for option one, if you could make a compelling argument.
Anybody else like to weigh in? Michael?
I would like to see, I don't know. I would probably defer to staff recommendation on this. Again, I'm not a civil engineer. This is a little bit over my head, so I'd probably like to see the staff recommendation, and I think I'd probably go with that.
Well, I could throw that out there. Staff recommends option number two for pretty much what Dudley said, the durability of it, the we think it will, and as does Baird recommend option number two, because just the aesthetics and the durability of it would be better than what we have had in the past.
So Lisa, if you're telling me that this is one of those cases where, and you're over here, but my camera's over here, sorry.
That's okay.
If you're telling me this is one of those cases where today's CapEx reduces tomorrow's OpEx, then alternative two probably is what my desire would be as well. I'm looking at what I'm working on.
Well, alternative two is also cheaper by 50%.
Exactly. And that's another reason we also like that option. Most cost effective.
Sorry, Stephanie, what are your thoughts?
I liked number two, and what flipped my thought really is that if we have what we have is option one, then why would we go with that again when it's way more expensive and didn't hold up and requires and could have more damage? I mean, I don't love the resealing part of it because that is kind of costly, but it just doesn't, to me, doesn't make sense not to go with option two.
Okay. I'm happy to speak unless, Josh, you want to go first, next, or last.
Either order. I like option two for all the same reasons.
Yeah, okay. Ditto.
Okay.
Okay. And I will say, Josh, I appreciate that you added in option three, or option zero, as you said, because that we really always should be considering, and sometimes we just don't. And I think it was valuable in the thinking for all of us. So I do appreciate that, but I would reject it and also agree with my fellow commissioners, option two. It's such an iconic structure. So many feet are on that pier every year. It takes in your entire vista when you're looking at that beautiful beach, and it's just, I mean, I just think we value it as a community, and I think it requires some attention and some care now. So if there's no other questions for Caleb, Lisa?
I prefer option, I just want to clarify, I prefer option two to option. It's unclear to me whether we should move forward with option two over option zero. Without context of what we're giving up instead. Lisa, have we already budgeted for this in our 3-year capital plan?
We're currently carrying an allotment, an allowance of $400,000, and that doesn't include the Pederma reimbursement. So with the cost estimate that Barrett has given us, and say we're around $300,000, it looks like an all-in total cost of the district of around 2.25 would be what I'm seeing as our maximum outlay right now based on Caleb's concept budget.
Chris, is that part of the fiscal year plan that we already approved?
That is correct.
We approved this on the September 15th board meeting as year one of the capital project.
All right, I stand down.
Okay. But very good discussion. It will be in the fiscal 21-22 budget that we approve in March. Yeah, so we approved in our September 15th meeting officially, but it's going to be added to our budget. So I want to approve the first year capital plan.
I want to put a giant plaque on that pier saying that, you know, we have thought about this pier long and hard and made tough decisions to keep its beauty in Glencoe, and we hope all of you residents understand that. But I probably want to put that plaque on everything that we ponder along the
market. True. But our next step would be is if the board does direct us to go with option two, is that we have a lakefront advisory meeting. I believe it's next week. I forgot which day off the top of my head. We'll bring this, we'll make a presentation to them that the board discussed these options, but they went with option two, and that we'll look at different decking materials and get their input. I don't know if we have that by the next Lakefront advisory meeting, but if we do, we'll present 3 to 5 options, and then we'll bring those back to the board after saying that the lakefront discussed it. So we'll be just sharing with this with them also. Yes, Chris?
Lisa, if we have a board consensus that option two is the direction we want to pursue, I think we probably want to start working out a contract with Baird to move that beyond, because the finish is just really a minimal part of the design, so I think we want to bring to the board a contract for Baird in February if we can.
Yep.
Is that okay?
So if we could have a consensus, it's not obviously a binding vote, it's just consensus to move forward to do that, that would be very helpful tonight.
Okay, so we'll just quickly go around. I think we have it, but Dudley, option
one. Let's go ahead. Yeah, option two.
Okay, very good. Stephanie, option two. Michael? Okay, Josh?
Two.
And two. Okay, so you do have a consensus. And good. And if there is nothing else for Caleb, and I don't think there is, I think it's probably okay for Caleb to leave the meeting.
Thank you, Caleb. Yes,
thank you, Caleb. We appreciate your time. Really interesting. Thank you.
We'll be in touch.
Okay, so we are going to move on now to the discussion on contract design services for Lakefront Park Center Bluff stabilization, crib wall replacement, and drainage. And again, Lisa and Chris will lead the discussion.
Okay, I just want to start off before I hand it over to Chris, and I believe John's also. That this was also part of the approved for 1 year, part of what year one of the 3 year capital plan. So that this was approved in the budget at the September 15th board meeting. So this is again also been advanced to talk about design services. So Chris, I'm going to throw it over to you.
Okay, we have John attending the meeting. John, are you there?
I am, Chris, of course.
Excellent. So, John is just going to briefly walk us through what the project entails and their scope. As Lisa previously indicated, this was in the year one, bond issuance capital master plan that the board approved in September. We prioritized getting the contracts in for the south overlook and the stairs just based on the timing for the work, and we kind of want to circle back on this because we know how important this amenity is as well. So I'll turn it, as you all know, John, I'll turn it over to him and he can enlighten us. Good evening, John.
Good evening to you all. It's lovely to hear you're suffering from, you know, sticker shock as usual, as we all. And now, let's see if I can manage here. Okay.
Well, it wouldn't be a public meeting, John, if we didn't have IT problems, right? Welcome to COVID.
Thank you. Oh, anyway, where is it? Bear with me a second. I don't know, we can do this the way it is. Okay, so tonight we're going to talk about this. It's the roadway that leads down.
John, we're not seeing anything.
You're not seeing anything?
Jenny, can you make sure he can share the document, please?
Yep, he's set up as co-host.
If you want to email him,
share.
If you want to email it to me, John.
Jenny, you're on mute. Can he share? Oh, there you
go. There he goes.
We're good.
It's working.
Yep.
Okay. Can you see this? With
yes.
The red line? Okay, that's what we're talking about tonight. It's 225 feet.
John, you're not on the right. You're not on the right document. Yes. You're on Schumann Overlook right now, is what we can see.
Have you got? Hold up. Can you see that? Bluff crib wall?
Nope.
Nope.
Oh, gee.
Right now we're on the site plan bluff stabilization for the Schumann Overlook is what we're seeing.
I will show you what you're looking at, John, on my thing. Okay. If you look at my screen, it shows you what you have broadcast.
There you go.
Sorry about that, guys. Okay. So 220 feet of crib wall replacement plus other systems, structural systems, an improved gateway at the water plant and drainage solutions for the bluff. So it's the wall on the right hand side as you descend, okay? Now a crib wall should look something like this. It's these concrete trays almost.
John, can you go to presentation mode? It's hard to see the detail. There you go.
Okay. All right. Can you see that, Chris?
Yes.
All right, my apologies. So crib wall is one of the oldest gravity systems you can think of. And it's a series of these stacked chambers that you fill with soil. It should look something like the image on the left. This is your image. It's literally decomposing before your eyes. And it ranges from 2 feet to 10 feet. And it supports the entire northern bluff. Then when we get down here towards the gate, this is the entryway for boaters that have to go through the water plants. And you can see it's pretty dreadful, but also notice there are three different systems of structural support, and the last one is sort of a pathetic back garden system that somebody added. And then we have a wooden system. So this is, if you look on the left, that's what's holding up your bluff. So you need to do something soon.
Sorry, John, I don't see the wooden system. What is
it's on the right-hand side.
Oh, the right side. I thought you said the left. Okay, sorry. Yeah.
The left is just a uniblock thing you can buy in, you know, Lowe's or Manhards or whatever.
Yeah, that's my kind of price.
Then you've got the crib, and then on the far right, you've got Wakefield sheathing, which is metal straps, and then behind that, wooden planks. Another wonderful system. So, first is to replace that wall. Try and work with the village and the water plant to create a new entryway. And then find solutions to this. I mean, originally we were working on the Lakefront Park Master Plan, and Dudley brought up the issue of the bluff. And we've all disappeared down this rabbit hole, and Dudley is just as well you did. You spent a small fortune restoring at the halfway house, and it can be threatened by this floodwater that comes down the bluff. And then the photograph on the left is what happens on a rainstorm. The water comes down from Hazel, nowhere to go, goes around the corner, comes straight down the stairs, and Chris has to continually repair these stairs. And that's pretty much it. I didn't want to take too long. Do you want me to continue, Chris?
So I guess, Lisa Brooks, is there any particular questions about the scope of what we're having Ultima New and Seabell look at, that type of thing?
Yeah, I did. I personally read through it all and had a little bit of confusion, and I'll open it up to the other commissioners. My question is probably a simple one, but I was just struggling with perhaps you could clarify the difference between what Ultima New is doing with this and what Seabell, because I looked at the scope of work of both of them, and because I'm not used to looking at this, it's a little unusual to have both of these entities, and there seemed to be some crossing over between getting the proposals ready and all that kind of thing. So could you just, Chris, you could probably answer that.
So Ultima New is the prime on the project. They're the landscape architect. So they are the ones that are directly reporting to the park district. Seabell is their sub-consultant for civil engineering and structural engineering. So they're the team that Ultima New has brought on to do the structural and civil end of things, while Ultima New does the on-site coordination with the park district, permitting, plan set development, collaboration with the village. John, am I hitting all the bases there?
Well, the other one, the president of Seabell said, we hope you're going to be involved because we'll probably mess this up aesthetically. that's also an important point because the engineers will find an extremely practical solution to the problem, but it may not be the aesthetic solution you want.
So that's a great point. So also, John and his team ensure that any areas disturbed in construction have appropriate low-maintenance native planting plans for the areas, for the things that go back. So they're really focused on making sure that this doesn't look like a concrete wall, or in a sense, if it does, that it looks as attractive as it possibly can, where Seabell is more focused on, let's find the best way to hold the bluff back. So those two competing styles come out with what we're going to have, which is a great project.
Got it. Thank you. Commissioners, do you have questions?
question.
Go ahead, Dudley.
There was some work that you were anticipating doing up on top of the bluff. Was it, is that part of it as well? It wasn't quite clear to me in the report.
Well, we've already worked on the southern overlook. That's stabilized. Mm-hmm. This is the whole center of the bluff, and then all the way up to Hazel. If you remember, Dudley, water came through the park, came down.
It cascaded over Hazel, the bluff. Yeah.
Over the bluff and through right. the bluff. Then it also flows across the surface of the park and mm-hmm. comes out on Hazel, goes around the corner, and you've got this torrent under a heavy rainstorm, which are becoming more and more regular. From Hazel and from the park. That goes down. Go ahead.
Sorry. So I think to Dudley's point, you know, we've got three separate structural retaining wall projects going on right now in different degrees at Lakefront Park. And there's a lot of reasoning behind that, because when we looked at them initially in the budget cycle, we tacked one big number on it. And by split, because to Dudley's point, we have a project that we've already signed a contract for the South Overlook. We have the Boating Beach Stairs, and now we have this area. The reasoning behind this is a couple of things. One, we wanted to get the simpler amenities out to bid while we can still capture the very aggressive COVID bid climate. And at the same time, if we bundle this all in one project, what we're going to end up with is an 8-month long construction cycle, which is just going to totally wipe out the operation of the beach. So by breaking the projects up and looking at the South Overlook and the stairs as separate projects, we're going to tailor them to the type of contractor that can be successful. What we don't want is a general contractor that comes in, gets 7 or 8 different subs, tacks 20% on their costs, and then puts another 10% on that, and that's their profit. We did that with the North Overlook. We brought in Martim. They self-performed all the work. We're really targeting the work to the type of contractor we want versus just one overarching contractual bid that might end up in the $1 to $2 million range. So, John, that's kind of the reason we're going to be talking about these different projects interdependently. So if we have to stop and say, well, which project are we actually talking about right now? This is the only project that we still have yet to sign a design agreement with Ultima News. So it's that crib wall to the left-hand side as you walk down to the water plant, and it's all the water pouring down over the bluff in front of the halfway house in that particular area.
Chris, that was beautifully done.
It's almost like we pay him, right?
Thank you.
I get excited about this stuff. I mean, these are the amenities that, as a director of parks, keep me up at night.
It's true. You said to me, it's not going to happen on my watch, that entire bluff going down to the beach.
Taking out the halfway house.
Yeah, I always have, like, you know, the you don't want to be the guy who renovated 7 playgrounds and then the halfway house slid down the hill.
Right.
We also want to design it as such that it lasts many years, 20, 30, 40 years. We don't want to come back to this. So this design will do that.
I mean, what we have out there is from the 20s and the 60s. That's really the kind of lifespan that we want to get out of what we're doing. We don't want to just have a temporary design for the next 10 to 15 years and say, oh, we'll come back to it later. We want to fix it right and fix it once.
And I'll quickly mention, Dudley, you're the only one that was part of the discussion for the Lakefront Master Plan that we heard probably 3 years ago, maybe 4 years ago. It wasn't a very aggressive plan, you know, but it was one of the things that sort of stopped us in our tracks was the what was going to happen along the edge of the bluff, along to the lake side of the path. And Lisa and I talked about that a little bit, that this bluff project would ensure that any of the things we discussed as possibilities for a future Lakefront Master Plan would be doable with this project. So,
yep, we're taking care of the infrastructure first, and then we can add the beauty later on for Lakefront Park. Any other questions?
Just a comment. I'm sure we're going to be coordinating with the village on this. This is kind of a tricky project. since they're going to have very heavy-duty trucks and stuff going down, even during construction.
They're already aware of the project, and we work very closely with them, anything that also involves them.
Yeah, Dave and his team and Alex at the water plant have really been our real great partners in this whole process. You know, we've already had multiple site meetings out there with them as we develop the scope, and they are certainly well aware of what our intent is and the reasoning behind it.
Good.
Good.
So, any other comments or questions for John?
So what we're looking here, Lisa, is to consensus to advance this for approval at the January board meeting.
Yes, yes. So I'll just do a quick round here. Michael, your thoughts on advancing the design?
Can't hear you, Michael.
Unmute.
I don't see an alternative. I think, you know, like Josh was mentioning before with here, you know, there's alternative one, alternative two, and maybe alternative zero. I don't see there as being alternative zero here. So I think this is one of those things that we're just gonna, you know, it's an infrastructure thing that we have to do. Unless staff tells me otherwise, this is stuff in infrastructure that we don't really have much choice on. And it's budgeted as well.
We budgeted it just approval, advancement of the approval of design aspect.
Yeah, I mean, look, this sounds like you guys did a good job. Appreciate John's presentation, Chris, your words. I'm okay with it.
And Lisa, this now, the approval process, we'll move it to the board meeting where we'll move to set the design.
We'll approve that design contract that's in the committee packet. Yeah, exactly like that. That will just go to the committee, the board packet for approval. Yeah.
Got it. Okay, Josh.
Can't hear me.
No, that's better. Yep.
I think we should advance it.
There you go.
Thank you. Stephanie?
I don't have any comments. I mean, I know we've talked through and considered this already and we're moving it forward, so.
Okay, very good. Who did I forget? Nobody. Yes, yes, advance it.
Okay.
So
Thank you. You
have what you need. If John's still here, I don't see his face. Thank you very much, John.
Thank you, John.
Thanks, John.
Thank you very much. I'm still here.
Oh, okay.
Thank you.
Dudley, did you have a comment?
Nope,
he did. Okay.
Sorry about the technical.
That's okay. Thank you so much. Have a nice evening.
We understand.
Thanks, Dad.
Thank you. All right.
We should point out that this also was in our CIP that we approved for the year as well.
Yeah, I pointed that out at the beginning of the discussion. Yes, this was part of that approval in September.
Good. So we will move on to update on capital fund balance projection. Lisa and Chris.
And pretty much Carol, too.
And Carol, I don't know why you're not in there. Yes, we'll leave that discussion. Thanks.
She should be there, too. So based on the discussion at the last board meeting, I believe, when we were talking about cost park plans and stuff, Commissioner Ludden brought up, it'd be nice to see what we have allocated, what capital projects we have proposed before, I guess, further discussing that cost plaza. We're not asking to talk about the plaza because we've already approved to have a design, and we'll wait to see what comes back with that, but we just wanted, based on that discussion, to give you this update, and I also sent you the 3 years proposed capital fund, capital project list that you received via email, and we can print out copies if you want. Just have those by because we're going to continue to discuss these projects, and you might want that. But I'm going to turn it over to Chris and Carol to talk about this, this update.
Okay. When we initially had the dialogue in June, we hadn't broken ground on our project. We were still, bids were coming in. And we were, of course, very conservative with, you know, what we wanted to project out as far as a fund surplus at the end of the project. Well, as we know, due to really a very aggressive bid climate that we saw across the board, a number of our projects either came in very close to budget or significantly under budget. We were able to really get some things done for a little bit different prices than we had seen, you know, prior to COVID, because contractors were, you know, obviously trying to keep their companies open. So what we did is we worked out a projection at the staff level, and we wanted to see kind of conservatively where we think Fund 69 and our capital reserves are going to be when we have this round of projects completed, to really show the board, well, one, you know, what would have to change if we did that clock plaza, and also what future projects could be incorporated down the line. So, Carol, if you just want to jump in.
Yeah, I think, Chris, you did a really good job in the memo on the bottom of page one leading into page two as far as where those savings were realized. Side note, we haven't gotten any of the grant monies from the IDNR or OSLED at this point. So just a special notation, we will get it. It's just a matter of when. But based on the savings that Chris identified in his memo at the bottom and into the second page, you can see that definitely savings of over $600,000 were realized. So feel pretty confident in the fact that we would be able to do this. And it's just a matter of looking at the other projects that are listed down in years two and three. Obviously, the big question mark at this point is the park grant, and who knows when we're going to receive information on that. So that's going to continue to be a big question mark at this point in time. But based on what we looked at back in June to now, definitely a much brighter picture as far as the funding available.
Carol, do we want to look at the spreadsheet, Lisa, that we sent out, just showing the difference between the June 2020 fund estimate and where we are now?
Or do you think it's I don't know if it's necessary to go over it. It kind of is highlighted by what you state in your memo and how we get to that point, but it does show a true comparison again on those two documents you sent out today.
Which again is part of the reason that we have an accelerated timeline for some of these old infrastructure projects. This is we're trying to duplicate this situation again.
Any questions?
Okay.
Just more informational for you.
It's for informational now. Will we reprogram some of that in the future? Is that where you're going with this?
Well, Commissioner Ludden asked, you know, when we're discussing that COF project, that Plaza project, if we had funds to do that, or would it take away from some of our future capital projects? So we wanted to show you how much we have expended so far, the savings we have realized since our original budget, and then the list of future capital projects from year two and three, so that you can look at all those variables when making your decisions about doing that COF park plan.
Great. It's good to be in this position.
It is.
I hear that.
So we still have, as you can see, we have a lot of projects we have to do in the next 3 years or more. So, okay.
Right.
Hearing now, we can go to other business. Is that okay? You're on mute.
Very quickly, yeah. And you did, I'll just, a second reminder, commissioners, I'm going to do this, print this out, and Lisa's offer to have the three-year plan printed, available at the take a front desk for any commissioner who would like to have that. I can't find mine, so I'm probably going to have to avail myself of that, but because it's just so much easier to read. But thank you, and you should all kind of keep these things handy. Very good. So let us move on. Other business.
Yep.
Lisa will lead the discussion regarding updates on Connect Glencoe Duke Park and Veterans Park entrance wall.
Excellent. As you probably have noticed, the construction fence came down over the winter break, and Duke Park is unofficially open. We will have a small dedication with the Zerlin family who donated money to Duke Park. As soon as their plaque arrives, it's a little bit delayed. And we're going to work that out with the family. And then we hope to have a bigger celebration in the spring when the interactive fountain and train are there. As far as Connect Glenco, we're getting really close to being complete with that. As you saw, the social spaces arrived, not putting them in their permanent place until the spring, because some foundations have to go in to make that happen. Jenny just, we put out, between Aaron and Jenny, put out the call for donations for some of those pieces, and I think we have another $14,900-something donation come in today, so kudos to Aaron and Jenny for making that happen.
Nice.
So, yeah, we're trying to get those paid for, so we're excited about that.
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear. There's like a weird noise, but how much came in today?
Was it, Jenny, 14,900 and...
No, it was 14,200 came in yesterday.
14,200 for a couple different, like, bunches and trees and social spaces and stuff like that. So
circus social.
What's the total, Jenny?
It was 14,200 for that one donation.
Total donations for the trail.
Oh, it's right around 30,000.
Jenny, well really done, Jenny. Excited that. We still have, I believe, the benches by the sculpture are still available. There's some social spaces that are available, so we still have more. I don't know if that's me making that noise or what, but it's really weird.
Sounds like some weird.
Hey, Jenny, can you put yourself back on mute?
Yeah.
Let's try that. Okay, that's it. We were too close.
Cost for a bench?
Four.
4,000? 3,000.
A bench. Yeah. Okay, I'm going to throw it over to Chris to talk about the Veterans Park entrance wall. I don't know if that's really the correct term, but Chris, you want to talk about that really quick?
I'm going to call it the Trail Gateway.
Okay,
that's what I'm
going
to go with.
That's beautiful.
So if you guys have been out there, once we cleared out the brush, it turns out that the brush was there for a reason, because that wall looks like it was made in about 1925. So... it's in pretty tough shape. So we started, the whole point of the trail was to obviously tastefully bisect the wall and make it a focal point. Well, our focal point is falling apart. So that's not a good place to be when you're doing a project like this. So we had an allowance in the bid of almost $10,000 for limited tuck pointing and repairs to the wall, but that's just not going to cover what we need to do. We're very fortunate that we are going to be able to cover 80% of all the repairs to the wall via federal funding. So we're only going to see, that's very good. So the state has agreed that they will help pay for that within our grant allowance. So we're only going to see an added cost to the park district of around $4,000 for about $40,000 worth of work. So in the spring, what the plan is going to be is to come out and basically disassemble the wall and then reassemble it with proper, because it has no foundations, no footings, nothing. It's effectively just stones piled up, mortared together on top of dirt. So they're going to tastefully disassemble the wall, photograph it, and put it back together with the same stones, but using modern construction techniques. So basically, we're getting a total top-down restoration, and the state of Illinois is going to foot the bill. So very happy with that. So very exciting. Our design team at CBEL, in particular Tracy, our on-site project manager, really kicked butt as far as that was concerned. That it's not easy to get an answer from the state of Illinois on these types of projects, especially during current COVID times, and there was a lot of bulldogging, but they finally gave in and said, okay, we'll fix the wall. So I was very happy to hear that. But probably way too much information, but the kind of stuff that makes me excited.
We'll all think of that when we pass that wall, Chris.
Yes. So that's a pretty much the update for Connect Link. Oh, we're using the trail. We're very happy to see that. They're very excited about the playground. We're already seeing incredible use. So.
There are, if you walk on the trail at first, it looks really great, and then there are a few areas where you notice something's not quite right, or something needs a little bit of grading, or there's like maybe a deer hoof print in the sidewalk. There is a substantial punch list that will have to be completed in the spring. So there are, things that that kind of might stick out that, oh, that doesn't look so great, or that's not quite done. We're not by any means closed out on the project. We're about 85-90% of the way done, but for them to get the last 20% of their money, they have to basically do what we say, which includes all those little nitty-gritty things like fix that sidewalk with the deer hoof print in it, or regrade this one particular area, or that bench is crooked, that kind of stuff. So just kind of just a brief update on that.
Great. Anything else?
Because there are hoof prints.
Oh, I think those are kind of cool, but all right.
It's really been gratifying to see the number of people on that trail and using that park.
Yeah.
Getting into that space.
Right under the trees, and yeah, it's wonderful. Yep. It really is.
All right. Anything
any other questions?
From anybody about any old thing? Okay. There is no reason to enter into closed session, so there will be no executive session today. So, recommended motion, I entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second.
Okay, roll call vote, please.
Commissioner Boren?
Yes.
Commissioner Kobe?
Yes.
Commissioner Ludden?
Yes.
Commissioner Underdog?
Yes.
President Brooks?
Yes, motion passes. Thank you,
Excellent.
Everyone.
Thank you
Thank
all
you.
So much.
Happy New Year.